Hi, everyone. Welcome to Film Roundtable. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name's Maria Prieto, and I'm really excited to be joined today by two new guests who are here to talk about their new film, A Nice Indian Boy, that just had its premiere at South by yesterday. So I'd first like to introduce director Roshan Sethi. Along with his directing and screenwriting credits, Roshan is also a physician who began writing as a student at Harvard Medical School and co-created Fox's The Resident while finishing his residency. Casual, as we all do. His directorial debut, 7 Days, was released by CineDime and won the Indie Spirits Best First Feature Award in 2022. Roshan, thank you so much for taking the time to chat and congrats on this new film.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And alongside Roshan, I'm really thrilled to welcome cinematographer Amy Vincent. Amy's body of work spans film and television. In 2002, she was only the sixth female cinematographer accepted into the American Society of Cinematographers, which underscored her role as an influential pioneer and champion for women in the film industry. Her feature credits are, I can go on and on, but they include Edith Bayou, Black Snake Moan, Hustle and Flow, and most recently, A Nice Indian Boy. Amy, I'm really glad to see you again.
I'm excited to see you too, Maria. We
Well,
just saw
obviously,
each other. We just saw each other at the awards.
I know. I
And
wish
your
I was.
beautiful parents.
Oh, there. Yeah. It was just great to spend some time with you before we virtually got to hang out.
Yep.
And, obviously, we're here to talk about the movie, but I think it's always important for our listeners to get to know you a little bit better in terms of like your background and how it is that you ultimately ended up in film. And Roshan, your way of finding your directing job, I feel like, was definitely unconventional. So I'd love to know, how you went from studying medicine to where you are now, premiering a feature at South by.
Well, it's a strange story. I'll keep it brief, which is basically that I was in medical school and became interested in medical shows and started cold calling, emailing, Facebook messaging anyone affiliated with a medical show to offer myself as a medical consultant. And I claimed initially to be a full-fledged doctor, but I was only a month into medical school when I began that process. And I did eventually, after contacting 50 or 60 people and receiving no replies from anyone about anything, received one reply asking me to submit some stories from my medical experience, which obviously was not extensive at that point. So I made up a 12-page document of stories that I said had happened to me, but that I had completely constructed out of thin air. It was just a document of fiction. And I actually did get hired as a medical consultant on the basis of that. And I kept making up stories and kept submitting them, eventually abandoning the scam that was the beginning of my career and becoming a full-fledged medical consultant. And then becoming a writer on medical shows, then becoming a creator of a medical show, and then becoming a co-creator, I should say, because I wrote it with two other people, and then transitioning to features. And I went from writing features to directing in 2020, and it came out of a frustration with getting features made. I'd been doing it alongside residency, but I was finally done with residency and had the time to direct because I only work part-time as a doctor now, just 9 weeks of the year. So that's how we got here. But I wouldn't be in Hollywood were not for medicine, oddly, because I began as a consultant. I don't think I would have found a way in because it's so hard.
Well, first, I'm curious what shows we're talking about here. Like, are we saying like a cheesy Grey's Anatomy or like what
Yeah, I
show?
mean, they were all, I don't think there is a network medical procedural that isn't cheesy, but I worked on Code Black, Black Box, The Resident. Is the show that I co-created, which was originally like a dark cable drama, but became something quite different when it was picked up by Fox from Showtime, where it was originally developed, and then proceeded to never write anything about medicine again. But this movie does obviously feature a doctor, and parts of it take place in a hospital, but not in a way that hopefully resembles a medical procedural.
I am curious how you were able to balance both of those things. I mean, most people struggle to even, find the time to write things. And then you also were in medical school. Did you have any semblance of social life? Were you just like fully, like your day, you had 20-hour days? Like, what were you doing?
No, I was just so achievement oriented. And because I was closeted for much of the time that we're talking about, I was really out to prove something to myself and to others. And I was capable of things that I'm not capable of today, now that I'm soft and on the other side of the closet. But back then, I was in such a crazy fury. I would wake up blazing and work harder than I could ever imagine working now. But I was doing a 70 to 80 hour week residency. It wasn't always so bad. Sometimes it was much less, but I would write in the mornings, I would write in the evenings, I would write on the weekends. I write very fast, so that helped me. But yeah, it was crazy for a short period there. And it was that crazy because of what I was going through. But now that I'm on the other side, I live actually a much lazier life than you might expect.
No, that's good though. I think balance is the most important thing that we can give ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, Amy, if I'm not mistaken, you started out as an assistant editor. How did that go about? And then how did you get behind the camera?
Well, the assistant editing was sort of the first job I could get when I came to Hollywood, and it took me a little while to get into the camera department, but I just asked everybody I worked with for a shot and finally got one. And I moved my way up the sort of old fashioned union way of getting an internship and then moving up through the positions. So I had the great privilege of working. It was the best film school you could imagine, working with lots of established cinematographers. And there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you both had that determination to just keep going for it until the answer was yes. Like, sure, fine, you can have this job. But Amy, I mean, what was it with cinematography? Like, why was that the path that you were drawn to?
Well, I think, you know, I started in live theater and at university, and there was something about the power of light and color that really struck me. And I had the privilege of studying film history at the same time, and we had the most amazing film history teacher. His name was Bruce Cawin. And, you know, discovering the power of color and light at the same time as studying the films of F.W. Murnau and things like that, the two things, the theater arts major and the film major, were the same thing, were in the same category at UC Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a really interesting time in history. It was the, you know, right in the middle of the punk rock era, and that sort of performance and rebellion and all of that stuff sort of joined forces to set me on my path.
Oh, I love that. I mean, yeah, let's dive into your film. You know, I watched it a couple nights ago, A Nice Indian Boy, and this is an adaptation of a stage play written by Madhuri Shikhar. You know, I described, the script was written by Eric Randall, and I describe it as a kind of queer Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, well, Indian queer Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, mm-hmm. or, you know, kind of like Meet the Parents. But Roshan, I'd love for you to give a little synopsis for our audience to, you know, get them excited about it.
Yeah, I think those films are the right references. And basically the plot is that Karan Soni, who's the lead, is a doctor who is out to his parents, but sort of in theory and not in practice. And he falls in love with Jonathan Groff and brings him home to his crazy Indian family. And there's a journey of acceptance and belonging that culminates in a gay Indian wedding.
Well, I love that because, you know, it starts at an Indian wedding and you really see him as this, you know, shy, almost outsider within his own community. And then, yeah, that culmination at the end, it's the perfect little bookend. But something I really appreciated with the film is it's messy. You know, it's not a movie that's like the idyllic rom-com, which, you know, even rom-coms obviously have like their moments, but it feels really honest. And as you mentioned, you know, this lead, he is a doctor, but this isn't a script that you wrote yourself. So I'm curious, like, when you came onto it, what was it that you connected with in the script? And then how much liberty did you have to kind of adapt it into your own?
I connected to it mainly initially because I am gay and Indian too. And that was the first thing, the thrill that someone would be making a movie about what feels like a very niche existence at times. The second was the opportunity to work with Karan, who the script was very consciously written for. I was definitely able to bring my own experiences and Karan's experiences to bear on the script. Originally, that character wasn't a doctor, for example. He worked in tech. But I would say that the spirit of both the play and the script were maintained through all of the changes that subsequently ensued, some of which were to meet our budget and our constraints. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it was a wonderful collaboration because Eric and Madhuri are both such good writers and also both very flexible writers. But I obviously come from writing, so we were all
Yeah.
able to work together.
No, I'm sure that that was definitely beneficial. What, how long did you guys have to shoot this?
Well, obviously we can't say anything about budget, but we can say, I think that we, and Haley, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we can say the number of days we shot, right? I just want to make sure that there's no issue with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so yeah, we shot for 19 days, right? Was it 19? Wow.
Yes, 19 days. And we finished early almost every day. And
Nice. What's er what's early though?
Early. We were budgeted for 11 or 12-hour days, but we weren't allowed to go into overtime on any day.
Nice.
That was the rule that was made to clear to us, and what was described initially as a 12-hour day became something less because it had to contain load in and load out
Right.
suddenly. So it shrank from 12 hours to 11 and a half to what felt like 11 most days was the hard out for us of true shooting, but.
Yeah, it was a super efficient set, and I think that's because we acknowledged the budget and schedule limitations that we had in terms of how we prepped the movie and how we prepared to shoot it. That's part of one of the beauties of working with a doctor as a director. Roshan is we were very well organized, and we did this thing called running the list every day during prep, where we made sure that we had completed the shot listing for the scenes we had coming up. And we had a really wonderful AD, Ashley Bell, who really helped us accomplish our days. And one of the things for me that made the set so efficient and productive and satisfying was that we really did work like a family. It was real independent film, incredible vibe, all female department heads, I might add. And there was just a feeling of being in full service of this beautiful story of love and acceptance. And the shot design was quite simple. Sometimes we had some formalism and some very purposeful. It was very designed in terms of we were very specific about what we were going to try to fit into any given day. And it was so amazing to see it on the screen yesterday at our premiere. And all the female department heads were here at the premiere screening, and I had never seen the movie with Stephanie's final touches in the edit and with Rashi's music, and seeing all the things come together, I just feel like the nice Indian boy family is we have a really strong bond, and it really comes from Roshan, the amount of organization that we approached our prep. I'll give you an example, Maria. I would say, I could put the second camera over here, and Roshan would say, you can, but I won't use it, and we'll probably need those 2 minutes later in the day. So there was a discipline to the way we approached each day and the schedule and the shot list. And it was really a satisfying feeling at the end of every day when we completed the day's work and we moved on to the next day's work. And I think that's part of the energy that kept it sounds extreme, like 19 days in our cool little movie, but it was an extraordinarily pleasant experience where sometimes, when you have a short amount of time, it can get kind of stressful. And we had an amazing team of assistants. I had the privilege of having an assistant who was not a camera assistant, it was a prep assistant who helped keep me organized. And Roshan had an assistant as well. And they teamed together and helped us while we were shot listing. They would help us read through the scenes, and we actively shot listed every single shot in the movie on the practical locations. And we did that with sort of rigor and the run the list kind of mentality, but it was invaluable to being able to complete the filming in a short amount of time and also keep a sort of lightness so that the performances could really unfold. We had one of our actors is a stand-up comedian, and it was her very first movie. So, having her assimilate the technical aspects of acting for the camera, it was, I hate to say it is this quite this simply, but it was so much fun. And it was that energy that came out of Roshan's preparedness that just propelled us. Like once we started that 19-day shoot, away we go.
No, I shadowed a director, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, and we had, I think, 20 days to get the feature done. We're doing 10-hour days, but there was such a harmony on the set that it kind of sounds like what you guys had, and it for sure had to do with the preparation. But also, when all of the leaders are working from that space of like love and acceptance, I just think that that exudes onto the set. And I mean, I'm curious, how long did you guys have to prep together, Roshan, if you've hit?
We had a 4 week prep, and that was really stressful. And I know the DP doesn't always start on day one of prep, but Amy did, which was a lifesaver. She actually theoretically started before me because I came a few days late because I was coming from the hospital because of an obligation that I couldn't change. I had a shift basically. So she was already scouting actually, even before I got there. But that was a real gift to be able to have Amy so early because we basically could hit the ground running. And Amy is just as organized and efficient. And we both had the same framework in mind of being as prepared as possible for what we knew would be a really stressful shoot. But the prep was just as stressful, if not more stressful, than shooting because we just had so little time to make a million decisions. And Amy was running a little department of one for most of it. Her assistant, PJ, who's amazing, wasn't hired until later. So for a while, it was really just Amy making all these crazy decisions. And so it was very stressful and very hard. But by the time we got to shooting, even if we abandoned our plan, which we sometimes did, we both just felt so secure in having something that we had discussed before it would when we were not, facing the barrel of however many hours we had in a day. But Amy is really fast too. Amy lights quickly and instinctively, and she's always good. It doesn't seem to require much effort from her. It's not like a lot of agonizing. So it just the days were they felt very creative because we had done the hard part before.
Well, Amy, I kind of want to go back a little. We've talked a little about the prep and you guys actually shooting, but tell us about when you got the script. What did you connect with? What did you feel? And then how did you present your ideas to Roshan?
Well, that is a very interesting story, and it takes us back to before this movie because Roshan and I actually met for a different project. And I did not end up doing that project. Somebody with a little more music video experience was the preferred choice from the studio. But I remembered Roshan. I came away from that meeting and I was just like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that my like perfect collaborator would be found in a 32 years younger than me gay Indian doctor. But there you have it. I think we both left our first meeting for the other project feeling like we were destined to work together one day. I felt the resonance with Roshan's work ethic, and you could feel, I guess it's a doctor's empathy or a human sense of empathy. And when I got the script for A Nice Indian Boy, I read it immediately, and my agent, like agents do, said, you need to respond today. And I said, well, I said, don't you remember? This is that doctor that I was talking about. And, we got in the room really quickly to figure out whether we were going to be able to be a good fit for this project. I mean, when I read the script, I didn't know as much about Roshan and his personal life, but I knew this was a very personal story to him. And that's basically what I'm looking for at this point in my life with my collaborators is somebody that has something important to say and that I have a resonance with in terms of work ethics and passion and feelings about the world. And when you find those collaborators, you have to grab onto them. And I knew I had met one when we met on the first project. together on this one. I had made a little sort of pitch deck with mapping and some ideas in it. And some of those ideas were things we carried with us into the production. And some of them were just a way for me to start communicating so I could come up with the right camera system and the right lookup tables for Roshan's vision. Because that's my job, is to bring his vision to life. And we were just talking yesterday. It's kind of funny. And Roshan said he wished maybe that we had even gone further with our enhanced contrast lookup tables. And I was like, you don't have to say that twice. I'm totally in. So I also really appreciated being involved at the point where the our schedule and budget parameters were redefined at a certain point. And I had prepped in my mind for a slightly more time and perhaps a little bit bigger budget. But it was so easy in a way to say, okay, we don't have the same number of resources and the same number of hours to shoot, but let's adjust our plan to fit that. And we stuck to it, and we didn't try. You know, it's something that I sort of ask myself at every sort of fork in the road in life. It's like, which is the simplest way? And keeping it simple ended up being not just a visual plan for us, but a whole mode in the work. And I love seeing that then carried out through the other department heads. You know, Rashi's score is also has a beautiful simplicity to it that lets the Indian flavor of it come through, but it's really just it's supporting the emotion of the characters. And seeing, you know, Flo, our costume designer, did such a rigorous research with the Indian wedding things. It's just seeing everybody's department sort of come to the table with that same sort of service to Roshan and the story. It was really great. And I got to meet the playwright yesterday. That was a real thrill.
Oh my gosh, what? How did he feel about the film? Was this his first time watching?
She
Oh, she? Oh my gosh, okay.
well, we had a really interesting conversation about how you turn something that is a stage play into a screenplay, and how she, you know, what her vision of it had been. And I don't want to speak for her, but it was just really, I think that she was really pleased with the sort of visualization of her story. And that all begins, of course, with Eric and the screenwriting. That way of taking something that's a stage play and giving it the depth and the world and the scope in which to play that makes it cinematic. And I never felt that Eric's screenplay was anything but a screenplay, but it was actually a stage play before.
Well, I have to admit, when I watched the film, I didn't know it was a stage play. It was until after I was doing research about it. And I was like, oh wow. So you're right. The script doesn't read as a play at all. Like, you guys really did a great job of putting it in that world outside of a stage. But Roshan, I'm curious, were you able to watch the play while it was still running?
I've read the play many times, and actually part of what happened when I came onto the project was I restored a lot of the play because I was obsessed with it and remain obsessed with the style of the writing. It has a very specific tone that only Madhuri Shekhar, the playwright, can do of comedy and drama. It's this really interesting, it's not too broad, the comedy. It feels very human and grounded, and it matches the tenor of the emotion in some way. So I did restore a lot of that, but that we were constantly facing the fact of it feeling like a play in our own way, because it is ultimately a movie of lots of people talking to each other. But we found it in small moments, like, for example, after the second proposal, there used to be a scene of him describing his engagement to his parents, and instead we cut from the proposal to their hands with the rings on it, to the parents looking at the hands. And that was so simple. It was just three. It's the beauty of a movie. In those three images, you can tell a story, but not only tell a story and replace dialogue, you can also make people feel things because the sight of hands is so human. And there are a bunch of recurring images of hands in the movie. And it reminds me of something I learned in medical school, which is in gross anatomy, when you begin gross anatomy, they cover the face so you don't have to stare at the face of the corpse, but they also cover the hands. because those are the most human parts of bodies. And they want you to remain as emotionally distant as you can from what you're dissecting, or you won't be able to go through dissecting. So that was always so striking to me to encounter that at the age of 21, when I should have been like drunk in a club somewhere. Instead, I was being told that you must cover the hands to keep away from the humanity. So that always stayed with me. But the movies can do that. They can evoke things like that. That image, I don't even know to what extent it remains with anyone who watches the movie, but it tells a whole story so quickly and so deeply in a way that a play never could. That was one of the things I loved about working on it.
Wow, no, I love to hear how you're still using the influences from everything in your life, with the medical stuff and bringing it and doing something so artistic with it. But I'd love to know a little bit about your director's prep and how it differed on a project that you didn't necessarily write yourself, or, if you kind of go about it the same way.
Yeah, I feel that personally that directing is writing, and that there is almost no distinction between them. And it because editing is writing, everything's writing. So the process of prepping the movie and coming up with the shot list was actually also the process of rewriting the script in a sense, because we didn't rewrite the script, but we were reducing things to images, and that meant cutting a lot, changing a lot, shifting things around without actually altering the script. But the shot list became its own language. For example, if you read the script for the first few pages, it would bear almost no resemblance to our shot list, which was its own separate, very specific thing that made almost no sense while we were shooting it. Because we were shooting these, like, it's stitched together in a very precise way that's almost storyboarded, but was never storyboarded. Like, so they really are separate things. And that's been a hard thing actually for me to learn, because I come from writing and it's changed the way I write for one thing. But when you are in the mode of writing, it is just so different, because you are not thinking of it being reduced to images unless you're very consciously aware of the way in which things are directed. But I've learned a lot of that as I've gone along, from people like Amy. Part of the reason I was so drawn to working with Amy, among the many reasons, is just that she is such a teacher and a mentor. That's one of the things that she really values and is very good at. And that was really helpful to me on a personal level, because I know so little about camera. I didn't go to film school. I went to medical school. And although I'm a science-minded person and interested in the technical aspects, my familiarity with them is, I feel, very low for a director. But Amy taught me so much. And I love learning that stuff, and just learning in general, but I love learning that stuff. So the process of prep was also the process of learning so much about how cameras work and what they can do, because they are such little miracles, at least to me. Having never gone to film school.
I love hearing that. I mean, I was also very fortunate. I directed the second unit of a film last year, and the cinematographer was instrumental in, ensuring that I would get on set. And he was so open to me asking questions about, things I wasn't sure, and it never felt condescending in the way that he'd respond to me. It was more, he loved that I was curious. But now I'm curious about how you guys found that groove, how you guys found the language between the two of you. So, Amy, if you could touch on that and how you built the trust between the two of you.
Well, I think it's okay for me to admit that I really wanted to be a veterinarian before I found lighting for live theater. I think one science-minded person meets another science-minded person, and it really wakes some stuff up in you. And, it was really important to me to find a camera operator who I was really comfortable with, who would carry that same thing over. We worked with a lovely man named Todd Eliason, who is a cinematographer himself, but he agreed to come and do this project with us because of the beauty of the collaboration and the story. And it was such a great choice because Todd's like a brother to me. And I said, Roshan is going to want to know all about the remote head. He's going to want to know all about, and it was really true. And I think the people that I had a choice about collaborating with were very also the same sort of type as me in terms of we really enjoy sharing the technology so that that can enhance and support the collaboration. Same with my colorist, Walter Volpato. He's ready, willing, and able to take the image apart down to the rawest elements of color science when we have time. I think it really, there are a lot of things that brought us together, and some of them are unspoken things. They're not things that you can define or you can say, I'm looking for a person who can do this. But, we're about to bring it all full circle in that I am doing an artist in residency at LMU. And our big thing that I want to close my semester with is Roshan coming with the movie to talk to my 10 cinematography students about our shot list and our process. But to be able to just keep that cycle going, it's the same thing we had with the assistants. I am on my best game when I have somebody to mentor. And I am also on my best game when I find a director as a collaborator that brings out the best in me. And I consider my sort of leadership mode is as a mentor. It's so cool. My mentor of 12 years, young cinematographer, she's my mentee. She had a movie premiere here at South By, and it was on the marquee. We had the State Theater and the Paramount Theater, and our movie was on the marquee at the State Theater, and hers was on the marquee at the Paramount Theater. And it was really cool to have one of my mentees have a movie. It's her very first movie as a cinematographer. So it's just part of who I am, and I think it's part of who Roshan is, and it's part of what, I don't know, maybe we recognized each other's science mind and also the work ethic aspects of it. But it was a discovery process. And when I saw that we were going to work with the young people, especially during prep to bring everything to life, it just made it really fun, as well as, you sort of stick to your own sort of rules when you have a young person that's watching you too. You know what I mean? It's like keeping yourself on
And
your own
that's
game.
the way medicine works, like to such a huge extent. Medicine is so structured on an apprenticeship model, and you are constantly operating as an attending with a resident and a medical student below you, and it changes the way you behave because a young person is there, and you kind of have to be more sure of what you're saying than if they weren't there. And you hold yourself to a different standard because they are there. So it's not just what you're giving them, they are weirdly giving you, and medicine would fall apart without this very strict apprenticeship model, which exists, I guess, to some extent in camera. It does not exist in many other parts of this industry. For example, I had never directed before, and then I was suddenly directing. It's not as if assistant directors become directors. And there are 26-year-olds writing the next Transformers movie. Like, feature writing is like, there's no apprenticeship. TV writing has tons of apprenticeships. So it is so all over the place in this industry in comparison to medicine. But I think the system that works the best is a true apprenticeship model, which Amy really respects and observes to a huge extent because she's constantly teaching. But and it's with her crew too, not just the people who are assigned as the assistants and the young people. And it really it enriches the whole thing. I wish more people did it. I think it benefits the art weirdly in
Amy,
ways that you can.
did you have a mentor? Is that the reason that you feel, so inclined to be a teacher, or is it something that you didn't have a mentor and you wish you had?
I did have a mentor. My biggest mentor was John, is John Lindley. He continues to be my mentor to this day. And, I was trying to distill it down into a description, but, I didn't know when I was working as John's second assistant camera person. I didn't necessarily know that I wanted to be a cinematographer, but I knew I wanted to be a human being like him. And there's so many things to being a leader and to being running an organized, graceful, elegant, respectful set that I would say to myself, I want to be like that man. And it was at a time, Maria, that way before you were born, when women in the camera department was not a normal thing. But I didn't know that going in, because John Lindley treated me with such reverence and respect. And the camera operator that I had worked with before I met John, Martin Scher, had treated me with so much respect that I was very fortunate early on that I worked with a lot of men who treated me like I was awesome and gave me every opportunity and never presented me with, even that idea or concept that there were closed doors for women in the camera department. And I'm so grateful for that because I was a rebellious punk rocker. And if I had known the door would be hard to open, I probably would have been even more driven. But I was kept from that. And, believe me, I've seen my share of obstacles in the journey, but it was really Martin Scher, who's a world-class camera operator, and John Lindley were my biggest mentors. And then, I came up in a time in the heyday of music videos where I was a camera assistant under all these amazing people, Derek Walsky, Bob Richardson, so I was exposed to a lot of uncurtailed creativity also. In a time, it was a while ago, but I did have a mentor. I had and he's still my mentor to this day. And you can have more than one. And I often consider the directors that I collaborate with my mentors, but it's an exchange that happens. And the beauty of a balanced collaboration is it's just such a gift. It doesn't matter whether you're doing a tiny budget movie in a short amount of time or whether you're doing a huge movie. It's like the real gift of the work is the people that you work with and the family that comes together with the goal of presenting. And our movie is about love and acceptance. So isn't it nice that our set was loving and accepting?
I love that. The whole thing warmed my heart. But I mean, I really appreciate what you're talking about with your collaborator also kind of being a mentor. You're both learning so much from each other. That's amazing. Roshan, I'm curious, obviously it sounds like your set had that harmony that is, you can feel it through the screen. But, how do you think you've prepped to be that type of leader? Or, I guess I don't know where I'm going with this, but
No,
how do
yeah.
you go about being that kind of leader?
Well, I first of all don't know that I am always that kind of leader, but when I am at my best, I do think I draw inspiration, not to be repetitive, from medicine, where the stakes are much higher. So we have to collaborate and work together and get along to a much greater extent than I think most other professions. And we are drawing from many, many fields of expertise. We have pharmacists and the radiologists who read the scans, and then the people who are on the floor are taking care of the patients directly, and then the subspecialists and the subspecialists, and these huge, massive, sprawling collaborations to take care of one person. Sometimes one person in the hospital who's considered complicated will have as many as 15 or 20 doctors involved in their care and not even know their names or who they are or the fact that they're involved. So that atmosphere I find to be a very well calibrated and useful one when it's working. The hospital can be very dysfunctional. But when it's functional and it's good, it's really an amazing thing. And I think medicine works best when it adheres, like I said, to the apprenticeship model, when there is a model of learning that is almost the primary purpose of everyone. When everyone is really focused around that, then medicine is really amazing. People are often, for example, afraid to be cared for by residents or medical students because they feel instinctively that they'll receive inferior care or less practiced or experienced care. When in fact, the thing you want is to be cared for by a resident because they care still. And they bring with them this whole sprawling team of teachers and mentors and the whole experience that is ultimately the best experience. So I think we were, I think I always try to bring the hospital to set, as everyone who works with me knows. I'm just constantly talking about it. The phrase that Amy referred to, run the list, is something we say on rounds every day. We're just constantly running the list. And I think that Hollywood could benefit from medical efficiency and medical collaboration and medical apprenticeship to extents they don't even know. Because it can be wildly, wildly dysfunctional on set, and people get away with things that you just wouldn't believe, or you would probably, having been there.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's funny. Sometimes I'll be on a set that's very tense and it just feels very toxic. And I'll always think like, someone's life isn't on the line here. And but you've literally been on the other side where you've had someone's life on the line. So I think, you have a good
Yeah.
sense of
I have a sense of stakes, but I also like can get my anxiety and stress can make me so like it's crazy to me that I can get anxious and stressed about Hollywood when I have seen so much worse in my life and when I know how much more important things can be. But even I lose that sense of perspective, even though I'm given it at least once a year in a huge way. It like stress sets are really stressful places. A lot has to happen. A lot of people have to work together, and the stakes feel high because we all care.
I'm curious about the casting process for this film. When you signed on, had it already had names attached, or is that something that you were, brought on from the start?
No, I everyone came after me. Karin was the first who came basically at the same time as me. He's my real life partner, and then is also the lead of the movie. And I said I wouldn't do the movie without him, but also it had been basically written for him. And then Jonathan Groff came after, and then everybody came after that, basically. But we found them one by one. We couldn't really afford a US casting director. We did have a Canadian casting director who was very helpful with casting local actors, but for our top five or six roles, we basically casted ourselves by calling the agents and texting people we knew, and we went on this own sort of amateur process of recruiting everybody one by one. Zarna, who plays the mom, is an Instagram comedian and a TikTok comedian who blew up during the pandemic, but had never acted before. We just decided to see if she could, and she could. So we went. It was a wild process, an unconventional process in many ways.
Well, with the schedule being so tight, what was your rehearsal process like with them?
We did no rehearsal,
Oh,
and
nice.
we did no rehearsal. And I actually, when you're doing the rehearsal, even for the scene, the blocking rehearsal, I try to have actors actually read it dead and not act because I'm afraid of like losing their energy. And I don't mind at all recording a bad performance. I don't know why everyone's so afraid of it, because you would not believe what you can use in editing. Like the single flicker that you put in some other part of the scene. Editing is so insane in the degree to which things are chopped up, used, reused, shuffled, and we can split scenes right down the middle and then tape two splits together. We can even do that on a handheld shot with VFX. So the possibilities are infinite. So my own personal perspective is just film everything, the bad, the good. You have no idea what you're going to end up using. And you just keep going until it's good, and then you just immediately move on.
I love that. Yeah, no, because you're right. There is like a big anxiety, like, oh no, we're not ready yet. It's like, okay, well, you'll figure it out. Like, do one, and then we'll see.
Well, the thing I've had to learn is that there's performance ready, and then there's camera ready. And camera does need camera rehearsal for certain moves and things. And that's where I think I get too impatient, because I should respect that more, I think, because that's different than the acting. Because I'm always like, record any bad performance, but like I think, DPs don't want to like record bad camera moves. That doesn't, serve them. So that there's a distinction there.
Because they'll split them in the middle and use them all in the editing room. No, one thing I wanted to mention, Maria, is that we were working, our timeline lined up with the writer strike and the actor strike so that we had a completed script and we were able to shoot. And we literally finished about a week before that, I think the actors. Strike hit, and that felt so fortunate, but there was a silver lining to it in that there was a forethought about the strikes coming and affecting the workforce, and I was able to have really great people on my crew, my Vancouver gaffer Sean Rooney and my key grip Will Parrott, and having Todd Eliason, who's a DP in his own right, as my A camera operator. It was just, there's something about this script that attracted the right type of people too. People really wanted to come and do a small movie with Roshan and myself. And I'm so grateful for that. And I hope no matter what we get to do, all of us or each one of us as individuals, we appreciate the silver linings and things like, sticking up for what's right for people in our industry and all departments, writers, actors, and crew people, because that the labor issues do affect our creativity and our ability to move forward in this industry. And there's, it can sometimes get distracting. And the fact that we were all able to be super concentrated for 19 days and make this movie felt like such a privilege in a way, in the middle of all the stuff going on with AI and labor issues and actors and writers and all the things. And it's, to me, it's such a beautiful place to be on a set with a bunch of collaborators. Especially, you know, it had been a while for me since I had told a love story in terms of a screenplay, and to be focused on that instead of exploding cars or, you know, gigantic visual effects, things, I had forgotten how much I love that. And it really, as far as the imaging for that goes, you know, we were rigorous about our planning and our shot design, but the movie has some, is, it's, I think one of the reviews called it modest. And I love that because that's all we needed. You know, I had a very simple camera package and a very simple, the shot design was done with rigor, but it's fairly straightforward. You know, there's a lot of classical formalist framing. And when I watch Stephanie, the editor's work, and I see, oh, she used that shot exactly where we wanted her to. You know, you realize how many hands are in that, the whole network web of collaboration, even in the simplest of storytelling tools. So, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like you guys have described it as a family. You guys built this little family. And Roshan, something I want to touch on, which you've already mentioned, is your partner, Kieran. And I believe this is your second collaboration together. Am I right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm curious though, you know, how do you balance working together and then going home and, you know, switching to, you know, a relationship? Or is it when you're on a project, is it pretty much just on the whole time?
I'm on all the time. He is not. He like is like knows how to take a break and chill, but I don't. So I was switching nothing on or off. I was just constantly on. But it is, I'm sure, exhausting for Curran. But we really like, it's so hard to explain, and I think people have trouble believing it in some ways, but we have so little conflict, even though we're working on a movie, and it should be like the breeding ground for all kinds of couple disagreements. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine being directed by your partner. But I think part of it is that Curran is so easygoing, so genial, and not attached to, not stubborn, and really open and willing to be directed. That makes up for my many deficiencies, because I would use none of the adjectives to describe myself. If we were both like that, I don't know what would happen. But it really is like, it's such an easy, fluid, beautiful experience. It feels exactly like our partnership. It is just the easiest thing in the world.
Wow.
In ways that are hard to find.
In terms of writing together, what, like, how did you guys, how did your weaknesses get, like, help with his strengths and vice versa? Like,
yeah, he's a very comedy person. So his mm-hmm. interest is the jokes, but he writes comedy in a very naturalistic, grounded way. So he wouldn't write, for example, 30 Rock, but he would write something like The White Lotus. He's just, that's his style of comedy, because I love both of those shows. But he does that. And then his experience and his style of writing is that he writes it in 10 minutes, walks away, and just doesn't care about it to any degree. Doesn't care what you do with it at all. I am much more fussy with writing and much more interested in the traditional structure and the emotional story beats and all of this stuff. So he basically gives me raw material and then I shape it into whatever I want. And he never looks at it because he doesn't care. The thing he values more than anything is acting. That's the thing that gives him the most joy. And I've realized over time that the way he writes is like a performance. He literally sits down at that laptop, he performs something, then he walks away. And then he isn't one to fuss over and rewrite. He trusts his first instincts. And his first instincts are so good that very little needs to be changed, because he is just a very naturally funny person. And he has an excellent command of tone that many people don't have. He knows when to go far, when not to go far. He can sense that internally in ways that I still struggle with comedy, because it's not my natural thing.
I mean, it sounds like a great partnership between the two of you, like very inspirational in both ways.
Yeah, no, we both feel really lucky, and you know, like Kern is the first person I ever dated, so and the
Wow.
last.
Wow.
So it's a deep and long partnership.
So yeah, it seems like you've learned a lot from each other. I love that.
Yes.
I want to pivot a little bit and talk outside of the film. And coming from the medical profession, this is, I'm sure, something you discuss a lot, but I think it's something that's very important to talk about on film sets, and that's, mental health. I'm curious, what kind of methods you have in place to ensure that you're in your best mental health when going into projects, and then while you're in the project, and then once you're out of the project, because honestly, like the set blues after you wrap are a very real thing. So I'm curious if you could touch on that.
Well, I don't think I have any useful advice on maintaining your mental health because I think I lose it entirely when I shoot, both during prep and during the shooting itself. But I do think I care a lot about everyone else's mental health. And part of the drive for efficiency and finishing early is so that people can live their lives, which I think is really important. And I think also incidentally makes the art better. But for example, we finished very early one day, I think like 4 or 5 hours early that first day we were at the hospital. And everyone wanted to pull up scenes from the next day and just get them done because we had finished so early. But instead, we actually just asked the crew, do you want to go home or do you want to make tomorrow easier? Like, what do you feel like? It was a Friday afternoon. We were heading into the weekend. And everybody just wanted to go home. So we just all went home. Little things like that. Suddenly we were a family making decisions together. And like, we had control of our lives because on sets, you often feel like you do not have control, especially if you're not the director. And that, things like that I care about, but my own personal mental health, I have no management of. It feels. I'm sure Amy's more balanced than I am.
Yeah, Amy, what about you?
Well, for me, I think the whole mentorship and being of service is a huge part of what makes me work. I also, one of the things I loved about being in Vancouver is that it's just so beautiful there. And I had my dogs with me, and I am able to go out and hike. And Todd, my camera operator from Vancouver, gave me all the great hikes to do. That's what I do during production, is I make sure on the weekends that I get some really good nature dog hiking time. And eat a good balanced plant-based diet. I mean, it's all the normal stuff. I also I pride myself on my ability to think quickly and clearly, and that comes from a life of sobriety. And it's a huge part of what makes me work. It's also the correlations to mentorship, service, and being an active part of the sober community. It's a big part of my journey, and the way I try to be a leader is in some ways by being sure that I'm able to communicate clearly and be generous with my heart and mind. And I going backwards on that, my dogs are just a huge part of what keep me like a rock. The unconditional love that you get from an animal, and maybe it all goes back to my desire to be a become a veterinarian. I don't really have time to get my DVM degree, but if I could, I would probably, when I was about 40, I'm gonna go back to school. I'm gonna do both. I'm gonna do everything. And then I figured it out, and I'd be probably still paying for my medical school right now. But I think in order to be a stable, you need to be a constant with the director and with all the people that work to collaborate to bring the movie together. And another thing that just keeps me on track is I see myself as equal to everyone. I see myself equal to the person who drives me to work in the morning, to the costume designer, to, we're all there together with equal value and equal responsibility. And I think that sometimes those things shift in terms of who needs to deliver what on what day or at what scene. But I also see myself, our responsibility really is to provide a safe and productive performance space for the actors. That performance space is also the performance space for the rest of the crew. And first and foremost comes the people who have to bear their emotions and their souls and their physical selves in front of the camera. But that kind of, when I came to a point in my journey as a cinematographer where I could legitimately feel like I was really doing my job by creating that safe and productive place for the actors to work. And it also had the cinematographic elements that I was looking for in any particular project. That's to me, when the collaboration is in place and you can, it's not about beautiful lighting, it's about providing the workspace for the actors and the rest of the crew to be able to come together and tell a story that touches people. And it comes down to, in some ways, it's quite that simple with this movie, is that the space that we worked in reflected the attitudes and the idea that about what acceptance and love, which is what the script ultimately is about. And we also have a certain amount of fun. I don't mean to make it all sound so serious. I just looked through a whole bunch of stills that one of my assistants sent me, and it's like everybody's smiling in all these pictures, whereas people are seriously doing their jobs. But there's a joy that I feel like in some ways it's my responsibility or our responsibility to keep that potential for any onset work, because like Roshan said, it can be a stressful place.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, I really want to thank you both for coming on today and just
Yeah,
chatting.
thank you for having me.
Is there anything else you want to say about the film? Do you have any idea when people are going to get to see it?
No, and in fact, I will have to le jump, unfortunately. My mom is here and texting me. but which is a frequent situation with me. But the film will come out sometime this year. We don't know when. Part of the purpose of bringing it to South by Southwest, obviously, was to find a distributor. And that process, which used to be, I think, faster, now can take months. So it's possible we won't know when and where it's coming out for months. But we hope, obviously, for to know sooner than that. But we are very excited and optimistic for people to see it.
Amazing. Well, we'll keep our eyes out for it. And Amy, Roshan, thank you for joining us. Thank you to everyone for listening. Make sure to follow Film Roundtable on Instagram to keep up with our latest episodes. And we'll see you all soon.
Bye.